You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, following up behind the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. And, yeah, we don't like that war no more. We don't want to study it. We don't want nothing that war no more. Lots of wars and problems going on. You know, we're looking for a better day. So this is Kauai Soapbox, and I have Eric Hansen in here.
Aloha.
And let's see if I got Malcolm.
Oh, peace and love.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
We don't need no more struggling.
No more struggling.
What we need is love.
There we go.
Uh-huh.
So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with George's Food Truck and Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef Georgia de Jungle supports KKCR.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So a lot of different things going on the islands and the world. You know, if I had a heading for this show, I would probably call it The Difficulties of Democracy.
Mm.
You know, so kind of stuff all going on all over the place, really. I wasn't going to go very deep into any of the stuff going on in the Mideast in Europe, because that's been really well covered on shows like Democracy Now, and it is very complicated. But there is all these wars and displaced people, and I see that the county is making this week a focus on homelessness. There was a vigil last night, and I think that, you know, that will come up. And even when there's been talk of, you know, giving shelter to people from the Mideast, that will come up later in this show. That seems to be important to people. It's been requested to be spoken about. We'll be talking to Kuhan Pak. She used to live here. She is on the advisory board of Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. She's good. Do you know her? Do you know Kuhan?
No, I don't.
She lives in Honoka. And she does a lot of really good things. And so she's going to come call in, and she's going to be speaking about stuff. There are a couple of meetings tonight, right now, even between like 3:30 and 7. They've got something going on in the. Oh, Kuhan's on right now. Okay, is she on? Okay, well, I'm going to pull her early then. Aloha, Kuhan?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, who's this?
This is Felicia.
Oh, Felicia, I'm listening online, and you're saying something different than what I'm hearing now, so I was a little confused.
Oh, okay, because there's a delay.
But we're not on the air now, are we?
We are. We're on the air.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Hi. So, yeah, you'll want to turn your radio off, and then you can hear me. So you're coming up a little early, so but stay right there. And I'm just going to tell people a few things, and then we'll just come a little bit earlier into our discussion on what's going on in the Pacific. But I wanted to let people know so they have time to get there. Tonight there's an Aha Moku meeting for the Puna Moku in Lihue in the P.E. Koi building. That's part of the county buildings at 6 o'clock. Are you over there on Oahu? Are you following the, not Oahu, Hawaii, are you following the Aha Moku stuff?
That's going on in Kauai?
Well, on Kauai, it's on every island. Every island gets a po'o or a head. It's a co-stewardship between our indigenous culture, our Hawaiian culture, and the Department of Land and Natural Resources. It's an effort for the Department of Land and Natural Resources to work a little bit in better agreement with the cultural system that has worked so well for 1,000 years. So,
you know, the indigenous stuff going on over here is so overwhelmingly about the Mauna Kea that if that's going on, it really got swept underneath all this other Mauna Kea stuff. So unfortunately, no, I'm not informed.
Okay. Well, we have been having meetings around the island all this week. Different moku are going to be having, that's their section of the island, are going to be having a meeting. And tonight, it's in Lihue. So that's the district that's Kapa'a, Lihue, down to Puna. I mean, Puhi. Also tonight is the Black Park meeting at the Hanalei Elementary School, the master plan. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show today. And there is a transit meeting right now in Kilauea. It's from 3 to 7 at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association Center. And tomorrow it's going to be in Kapa'a from 3 to 7. And Thursday it'll be in Kaloa from 3 to 7. And it's really important that we get our bus situation fixed, because we have too many cars and probably not enough people wanting to ride on the bus. So I wanted to let people know that, so they have enough time to get out and go to the meeting. And in the second half of the show, because you brought up some of the Hawaiian issues, we will be speaking about the Na'i Aupuni effort, and then there's both people who want that and people who don't want it. And I believe we're going to be getting a call in from one of the protectors up on Mauna Kea shortly after the top of the hour, after 5 o'clock, and so we'll be hearing about what's going on there. So the word that I've seen on Facebook is that all kinds of officers or enforcement officers are being brought over from Oahu and Maui and different places, and so it looks like they're prepping to do some arresting. Because they know that the people do not want the construction to start. And so that's a challenge that's going on Hawaii Island, and it impacts people all over the islands, because many, many people are standing behind those who are uncomfortable with the government's choices in that. So bringing it to you, Kuhan, maybe you can tell the listener a little bit of your background and what gives you so much strength in understanding what's happening in the Pacific.
Well, thanks, Felicia. Thanks for having me on. I guess it's because I was raised on what I like to call the Blue Continent, Moananui, the big ocean. I was born in L.A., and in the 60s I moved to Korea. And in the late 60s, early 70s, I moved to Guam. Of course, each time I would go back and forth between the West Coast and the East Coast of Asia, we stopped in Hawaii, so that's how I got to know Hawaii. But the main point is that all of these places are heavily militarized, whether it be Korea, Guam, Hawaii. And unwittingly, I became very well versed in the ideology of militarism and its impacts on democracy, culture, environment, and that it really comes from today, you know, in our era, it comes from the Pentagon, and it really, for our region of the Asia Pacific, it's centered here in Hawaii. And so what I guess I've sort of evolved into a kind of expert on militarism in the Asia Pacific, and I'm currently campaign director for the Asia Pacific program at the International Forum on Globalization, as well as working with the Global Network Against Nuclear Power and Weapons in Space. And does that answer your question?
Yes, and what I think is also kind of interesting is that ethnically you're, I don't know, I'm guessing Jewish Korean?
Yeah.
So, like, the Korean part probably pulls you tighter into the Jeju Island. Last time, or one of the times I've had you here in the studio, you were on your way over to Korea to block some incredible devastation that that I believe has happened.
It has happened, and last month the first Aegis destroyer did pull into that port, that Navy base, that state-of-the-art high-tech missile Navy base that we were working so hard to stop. I might add that Aegis missiles are used on those destroyers, and they are tested on Kauai at PMRF, as well as the missile bases now in Eastern Europe that are encircling Russia. So there's a lot of money being made in missile production, which it's kind of funny because the whole military-industrial complex and defense industry spends billions of our tax dollars making these huge, massive armaments, when in fact the real threat to homeland security is asymmetrical warfare, which is the kind of terrorism we saw in Paris. But I don't really want to get into that other than to show how it connects to us here in the Pacific.
Well, we've had something called the Pacific pivot. And so when I say we, that means the United States of America has determined that there would be a Pacific pivot where the emphasis is moving away from Europe or putting more emphasis in the Pacific region.
Yes, and you know that might shift now after last week's events, but in 2011 Obama did make the announcement about this Pacific pivot where 60% of all Air Force and Navy resources were going to be focused on the Asia-Pacific region. Why? Because we've got a rival hegemon on the way in China. Both of us are capitalist economies. They're state capitalism. We are a private capitalism.
Or corporate
capitalism. But both both systems rely on expansion to grow, to develop, to exist. Without growing, you know, it's like Woody Allen said in that movie Annie Hall, it's like a shark. If you're not constantly moving forward, you die. And that's the unfortunate nature of capitalism. So it voraciously eats up all of the resources on the planet, the last remaining ones. And here we are faced with this 20% of the population in China that's going capitalist, and we're competing with them for sea lanes, for trade routes, and for minerals in the South China Sea, in Africa, South America, all over the planet. So this is why we're putting a lot of our military strength in the Asia Pacific, and how that translates on the ground is very chilling. It's not an abstract thing. It's destroying livelihoods, environments, reefs, oceans. Basically, it takes the form of base building, building bases like the missile base in Jeju, like all the bases in Okinawa, and like the new one that's been resisted ferociously for the past 20 years by the Okinawans. And it also takes the form of military practice. And military practice is where troops practice shooting off torpedoes from submarines, dropping bombs from airplanes, from helicopters, landing amphibious attacks, all kinds of underwater detonations, all kinds of land detonations, stuff from the air. And you've got to practice all these new armaments that continually come out in order to be proficient when war does break out, if it does break out. Now, the problem with this is that it wreaks enormous havoc on the environment, even if there's no war. And what I have found to be particularly upsetting is this year, 2015, there has been an increase in military practice that is just through the roof, because it's not just what goes on in the Hawaiian Islands or around the Mariana Islands or around the West Coast, which are already designated quote-unquote range complexes, which is open seas that's designated for doing all kinds of military testing, including the dreaded sonar, which is just the tip of the iceberg, the sonar that causes beaches by the hundreds to whale themselves. But now Ashton Carter, who's our defense secretary, has traveled to a score of countries in the Asia Pacific in order to try to solidify relationships with potential allies or with current allies to create a kind of political bloc that would oppose China, kind of like our team versus their team. And part of that, and much of that, is doing military practice with them. So currently, you wouldn't believe the number of military practice games that have gone on this year alone, unprecedented volumes, between the U.S. and South Korea, India, Japan, Australia, the Philippines, Singapore, Malaysia, Bangladesh, Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Malaysia, I said that, Thailand, Timor-Leste, and Vietnam. That's huge. And what's really horrible, if you're an environmentalist, is that I think the worst one of all is Talisman Sabre, which takes place on the north coast of Australia. That's Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 33,000 troops this summer met from Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S., three submarines, Osprey helicopters, Cobra helicopters, 21 ships, jet fighters, over 200 aircraft, and what I think is the worst are the amphibious assault ships.
So these are, you're talking about like war games, like when we do RAMPAC.
These are war games, and this happened for the first time this year. It's been inaugurated. It will now happen every other year. Also for the first time this year, we had war games in the Gulf of Alaska.
Right.
The Navy themselves predicted that these war games in Alaska alone over the next 5 years will kill 182,000 marine mammals. Alaska alone. And I'm talking about war, and that's because they had to say that because that's under American jurisdiction. Now, when they do these joint practices all up and down the Asian coast, there's no environmental oversight. So just imagine the kind of destruction that's going on.
So it's like a war on the ocean, even if there's not a war on another country, it's a war on the ocean. And I read an article that you wrote called Islanders Unite to Resist a New Pacific War.
Right.
And I found, this is one of the reasons I called you, because what we'll talk about later in the show is a film that was out last week. We talked about something called This Changes Everything, and I went and I watched it, and it talked about the people's movements that are happening everywhere, where people are working together. And I see in Okinawa that, I mean, we've seen all kinds of intense pictures of senior citizens being arrested and lying down. And in Jeju, I remember seeing people of the cloth, you know.
Many priests, many ministers, and Buddhist monks.
All being kind of drug away and drug out. Like, it seemed like,
to this day, every day, even to this day, after that base is built, for the past 8 years, the ministers and priests are holding mass in front of the base, and they're getting arrested and dragged away.
Because this is probably going to be happening this week here in Hawaii. And so, you know, we're watching across the world where people are working, the citizens are working to reverse and change this. I saw, even not to pull too much into France, but I liked the big, big, big crowd that happened like 2 days later where they had their signs up, not afraid. And, you know, standing together. And it's important that people are able to outspeak, outbe these very, very heavy military budgets and elements like this. And I'm kind of scanning your article here, and because I was seeing where it talked about outsourcing military force, I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, because I do believe that that has been something that is feeding kind of what we're having right now with the ISIS problem. It almost is like because there has been too much outsourcing of military force causing internal strife in other places. But can you speak to outsourcing military force
in
the Pacific?
I don't know if you made it clear when the film, the climate change film, is showing.
The next showing will be this coming Sunday at KCC, Kauai Community College, in the cafeteria. They're going to do one more after that. They haven't determined the date yet. If people would like to have a showing of this film in their area, they could contact Apollo Kauai. But it was last Saturday. It was overflow crowd in there. And it really was an uplifting story, even though it's about a bummer situation. Because showing how, you know, we're all indigenous to this earth. There was European effort and North American and Asian and, you know, all around the globe, people are standing up for a little bit more sanity of what needs to be happening and protecting the earth and working really very, very hard to protect the earth. But it is a constant battle to keep the destruction of really sacred areas, sacred to the earth, like what's there in the reef in Jeju Island and Okinawa. We've had several shows on the vitality of the reef in Okinawa when, you know, here in Kauai, our reef is dying. So it's important that we're able to be successful in our efforts to protect. And
well, let me answer your question about outsourcing and preface that by saying that, yes, the article was about a trip I took. I was invited to a conference that was exactly what you're talking about. That's particularly young people coming together and saying, hey, we're going to inherit this planet. We've got to do something now because the formulas that have been in the past aren't working. And it was very inspiring and fascinating because there were, gosh, people from mostly China, Japan, and Korea, but also Indonesia and New Zealand, and all islanders, people from the islands, the Ogasawara Islands of Japan, the Ryukyu Islands of Japan, and I was invited as an islander too, not just as a Pacific Islander. When I say, I don't mean I'm an ethnically Pacific Islander, but I live on the Pacific Island, and I live in the Pacific Island that is the ground zero for the decisions that are made that impact all these people in terms of bases being built in their home islands, in terms of war games that are going to be played, in terms of missiles that are going to be stationed on their islands. So I brought in a different perspective, both as victim and perpetrator. I mean, I don't have a victim complex, but, you know, we too have to deal with Osprey helicopters flying and disturbing the peace. I was just driving home the other day and was amazed to see an Osprey by my side along the coast. But in terms of outsourcing, okay, you ask about outsourcing military. Now, it's not exactly the same as giving the Taliban arms because they're fighting the Russians and we want to fight the Russians, so an enemy of theirs is a friend of ours. It's not exactly that, but it's somewhat along the same terms. And basically what's going on now is that the U.S. is getting client states like South Korea or Japan or the Philippines. These are countries who are our strong allies and with whom we have what are called status of forces agreements or bilateral agreements in which we have our troops there. And basically, we call the shots. The U.S. calls the shots. So we get them to build a base. That's a Korean base in name only, but actually functions to serve the Pentagon's agenda. And right now, so that would be outsourcing base building. Just today, I saw a news piece that the U.S. had given two warships to the Philippines. Just from what I know about the arms industry, we don't give them brand new ones. We give them used ones that still function, and that way they can do our bidding by patrolling the sea lanes. You see, one needs to understand that it is vitally important from the U.S. capitalist corporate point of view to control the ocean around China because all the oil that comes from the Middle East that goes to China, South Korea, and Japan passes through this tiny narrow strait that's between Java, which is part of Indonesia, and the Strait of and Singapore. It's called the Strait of Malacca. At its narrowest point, it's 50 miles. So I'm talking all oil. This is a traffic jam of container ships. Now imagine whoever controls that choke point and then the Sea of China, which comes immediately north of that, whoever controls the flow of oil to these major economies controls the Asian economy for the most part, which in turn drives the global economy. So this is like one of the preeminent power points economically on the planet. So this is why it's ever so important for us to beef up our relationship with the Philippines in order to get them. We're now outsourcing patrolling that region so that we can keep that in American hands, that the flow of trade going in and out from the Middle East and Asia. And
Japan is getting their own, they're having a military again, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, let me get into that just first by saying that the Philippines, keep in mind, when I talk about the Philippines, I'm not talking about all the Filipino people. I'm talking about the governments, because there are many, many Filipino people that do not want either Chinese or American military in there. They want true sovereignty. And I know a lot of people don't have the imagination to see that there are alternatives to that zero-sum game, that it's either going to be we're either controlled by the U.S. or we're going to be controlled by China. No, it doesn't have to be that way. If our leaders are savvy enough to build political alliances and create regional blocks of power. But getting back to Japan, your question about Japan, it's very interesting because, well, I remember when I was a little girl, my mom explained to me that the reason why we had really cool Walkman and Honda cars were so excellent and so great on gas mileage, and that the Japanese were such great technicians, is because General MacArthur in 1947 said, after we won the war, that what you people cannot do anymore is have an aggressive military. Your military will be for defense purposes only, and it will be very strictly defined. And all of your electronic know-how is going to go into something else. And it ended up being entertainment systems and automobiles, which we all enjoy, and which the planet, you know, it has been helping in terms of gas consumption and greenhouse gases. Well, now, one of the bilateral relationships we've had, and probably the most dangerous one with all the Asian countries, has been Japan. And we have pushed, well, first of all, let me just say that there is a guy in office with the Liberal Democratic Party, which is the Hawks. They're very warmongering, and his name is Shinzo Abe. And he's very, he wants to relive Japan's imperial glory of the early 20th century, and he will say that he will not acknowledge that hundreds of thousands of comfort women from all over Asia were used as sexual slaves by the Japanese troops in World War II. He's totally into denial. He makes it very clear he believes China is an enemy and they need to be stopped, and he has done everything he could to ramp up the military budget. So he's the perfect partner for the Pentagon to make an agreement to basically, he agreed that he would push through and do everything he could in his legislature to push through a new constitution, which would basically dismantle the clauses that forced Japan to no longer be military. So now, so 2015 is a very pivotal year for this century in terms of what's going on in Asia, for the reasons I mentioned with all of the different war games and the base building, but I think really significantly for the complete dismantling of Japan's beloved peace constitution, because when he did that, there were young people to the tune of 100,000 outside the legislature camping out for a month, beating drums, chanting no war, no war. But because he was able to manipulate his party so that they had all of the significant votes, he was able to railroad it through, and now people all over the country are really upset, and they're going to do everything they can to bring that down. But it's going to be tough.
I would like to take this moment to acknowledge I've got a number of listeners mm-hmm. from Japan that I can tell online, so
great.
I want to say aloha to them. I also have New Caledonia. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Eric and Malcolm are in here, and this is Kuhan Peck.
Yeah, Kuhan Peck.
Oh, sorry, Kuhan
Peck. And, or if you knew me when I lived on Kauai, Camera.
Camera, and that's what I always think of
yeah.
you. So that's why I struggle with the name a little bit, because
yeah.
you're Camera to me.
Mm.
So thank you on some of those points. I have Eric in here, too. Eric, are you familiar with all of this stuff going on? I mean, we're hearing... We've been hearing this whole week about everything going on in Europe and the Mideast, but it just seems like almost any stone we unturn or turn over, there's money seems to be correlated with war.
Okay, so I actually got a email today from Senator Brian Schatz. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you guys
yep.
get emails from him. And the United States government just... passed a whole bunch of money to put in more infrastructure spending for militarization here in Hawaii.
Mm. Yep.
The story's been going, as at least we heard today, and if you don't know already, is that the focus of American military involvement is going to be focused in the Pacific. It's definitely the place of interest. There's a lot of different things for militarization interest, and I think... you know, what we're talking about with China and the oil is one of the really key things. And it seems like if you look at where our military involvement has gone in the last, since my lifetime, it's been going where the places where the resources are, where the oil is,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. So strategically, whether I agree with militarization or not, I understand why they're doing it. Should they be doing it?
I mean,
if you want my opinion, no, we should not. We should be putting our resources, our money into education, clean water, healthcare,
yeah.
infrastructure, and other kinds of ways. Just, you know, spread the aloha.
But we're seeing, like, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and these big trade agreements are going through, and it seems like these shipping lanes. I saw another place, an article recently, where it was... all these marine monuments and sanctuaries, the way we have Papahanao, Moku, Akea, there are corridors all over getting spliced out in the ocean. Looks to me like there's our shipping corridor issues. And so I'm asking you, Camera, these ships have been going for decades, right, or really 100, 200 years, the big ships that bring all of our merchandise and our fuel and everything
right,
else.
Right, but not the volume.
So now it's just that there's so much product going that we have
right.
to...
Right, it's sort of like compare Kuhio Highway now in Kapa'a compared to 1990. Same thing with ships.
Okay.
And think about it. We didn't have a Home Depot in 1990, and we didn't have a Costco. And so all this stuff is going up all over the planet, and so there's just more stuff and more satellites. It's just there's just stuff everywhere.
And so when they're doing all this posturing, to me, when I see us putting bases all around, basically it seems like we're pointing at Russia and China, like we're kind of going back to the Cold War. Is that your interpretation?
Well, I think it's kind of a no-brainer. Why are we making the people that the countries that were our enemies again, other than I mean it's just so unimaginative. Now I know I mean, what is my interpretation? Now, that's like a no-brainer. It's obviously we're going back. But what is my interpretation is that I believe it's because the defense industry controls a lot of lobbying in Congress, and we have to continually produce arms even when it's not to our benefit. For example, the Pentagon, there have been, I think there was a fighter jet that they advised Obama, no, we cannot. This is a waste of taxpayers' money. But because it was manufactured in many different states, the Congress people fought to keep this particular plane in production so that they could get votes in Congress, right? So they could get reelected. So it's like a terrible system where we're working against ourselves, where we've become so entrenched in militarism, which has nothing to do with defense, but it's simply the production of military to promulgate more military and to create more military, and all of there's profit involved. But I want to get back to what Eric was saying, and he talked about, you know, do I believe in it? You know, is this, there's got to be another way. And I was so moved by the statement that came out by this conference I was at. It was so, I mean, first of all, hardly anyone spoke English, except there was one professor out of, a young woman out of the Middle West who was Korean-American. So she sort of, like, she speaks Korean, and she took all the information, and she crafted a beautifully written in English. We came out with versions in all the languages, but the one in English I thought was beautiful. And she says, shall we go with this? And she says, no, we will instead create another kind of geography. Through our Peace for the Sea camp and similar projects, we are already creating alternative political communities based on a sustainable economy, the ethics of coexistence, and our shared responsibility to preserve peace. And I love that, because I love the idea of alternative political communities. And what that means, it means like you and me, Felicia, and our radio listeners and the people over here who I talk to who share our beliefs, because I don't think we can depend on Brian Schatz, even though I agree with him in many ways, you know? I don't think we can depend on some federal program to create a framework by which indigenous people can seek nirvana. I think we have to do it ourselves, because they have a different agenda. And it was really wonderful being at this place, because I want to mention, since we are all islanders, since we were all islanders at this conference, we really are invested in ocean health. And we really recognize that it's going to be us islanders, regardless of our nationality, but our islanders are the caretakers of ocean health. And that's sort of like almost like our foundation. And so next year we're meeting in Taiwan, and the year after a different island.
Kalamai, can I interject just for a second? I'm just wondering. So, I mean, I feel I'm on the same level as you of where we're talking about stuff, but just for the audience that isn't maybe on that same thought process, you had talked about the government having maybe a different agenda than us as the Makainana or the commoner, the people. So what in your mind is that agenda that the man is pushing on us?
Well, usually it has to do with money.
Mm-hmm.
Always it has to do with money.
Maybe
I mean, it's
in
so
control.
Interesting, because I just came back from Okinawa, right?
Yeah.
And it was so interesting, because these people have been fighting the building of another U.S. base for 20 years, and they have succeeded. They have, the governor of Okinawa recently returned from Geneva in the UN, where he spoke on behalf of being an indigenous person and being discriminated against by the mainland Japan, and that this violates the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Now, they formed their government. They were using the processes of the Japan government for him to be elected, but they really are solid, and they have been offered billions of dollars every year to build the base, and they consistently turn it down. And now that those bribes aren't working, you know, the Japan government is scratching their head. What do we do now? So I noticed today the Japanese government has filed a lawsuit against the governor of Okinawa, So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, because it's going to play out in Japanese Supreme Court, which of course is going to be biased. And so they're really now, they're in Washington, D.C. today. There's a delegation to try to gain support because they see a big international fight coming. So when you ask what is the agenda, well, you know, the agenda of that government, of course, is to, they want to build bases in Okinawa, but not only in Okinawa, but other islands. And only this year are they able to build those Japanese bases in other islands. Why? Because their constitution has been dismantled. Only this year are they able to start building tanks and fighter jets, which they have, and they will be exporting them. In fact, one of the Pentagon generals has said that the Mitsubishi tank, amphibious tank, is such a great instrument because, and so far superior than anything made in America, because of the traction and speed with which it can go over reefs.
Wow.
So, I keep in mind, Mitsubishi is the company that manufactured the Zero jet, which flew over by the hundreds in 1940, whenever, and bombed Pearl Harbor.
Right, so we're having a lot of history repeating itself. I really appreciate all your passion that you have for these things and how much effort that you've made, and that you're going regularly over there and keeping us informed here. And
well, I feel I'm a bridge because I know that we all share passion for the ocean and passion for the health of the seas and the reefs and the fish. And Hawaii is, you know, it was in the 1890s that Theodore Roosevelt actually said, and this is the direct quote, "Our future history will be more determined by our position on the Pacific facing China than by our position on the Atlantic facing Europe." What I mean to say is that the only reason, Felicia, you and I and all of the people who come from outside Hawaii can enjoy living here is because of that vision of Theodore Roosevelt's, because Hawaii exists to project military might from the United States into Asia. So it is really very important for us, if we care about Hawaii, to understand we're being used in order to project that. And we need to keep track of what's going on in Asia, too, especially because so many of our local people have Asian ancestry.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share with the listener? And we want you to come back and come in this
studio. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I think my one final thought, I want to leave some statistics with you that blew my mind recently, you know, just to give you an idea of the kind of waste that these military games create, like just in terms of oil consumption, fuel consumption. The U.S. military is the single largest consumer of fuel in the world. If it were a government, it would be the 34th largest consumer between Denmark and Iraq. For example, the F-4 Phantom fighter jet alone burns over 1,600 gallons of jet fuel per hour and peaks at 14,000 gallons per hour when it goes at supersonic speeds. The B-52 jet, the current model with 8 jet engines, guzzles 500 gallons per minute.
Wow.
So the U.S. military is also the biggest spewer of greenhouse gases, and it is totally exempt from any global climate change treaties, such as the Kyoto Protocol. So even if the U.S. did sign on, the military is exempt. And look at this kind of fuel consumption and this kind of emissions. It's sinful. It is evil. And this is nothing to do with defense. So that's my final word.
Okay. It sounds like a Mad Max film. I remember that a long time ago when they had that movie, and he's driving around everywhere killing people or whatever just to get more gas.
Right.
Just stop
get more
driving,
gas in order
know.
To drive around
to get more
gas. Around more to get more gas. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So
thank you so much, Felicia. Thanks, Eric, for
mahalo,
your input.
Mahalo.
Mahalo, everyone, and hi, everyone, all my friends on Kauai.
Yeah, we love you, Kamala.
We love you, too. I love you guys, too. Okay.
Okay, thank
Aloha.
You so much. Aloha.
You know, Felicia, it's kind of interesting all that the Manalo was just shared there, and I was just kind of doing some research, and part of the thing is since 2012, is that the U.S. has been trying to make partnerships in places like Cambodia and Thailand and other areas in the Pacific with the intention of containing threats from China. Yet China has yet to build a military base outside of China. So there is no military bases in the Pacific that the Chinese are currently operating. So it's some of the logic of justification of these things, I don't know if it's really relevant. And I guess for those who aren't seeing the issues, you know, you're out here in Hawaii or some other place in the Pacific, and you're like, oh, I don't know, this militarization thing, you know, it's okay. You know, it hasn't affected me right now. But if you look at historically what has happened in the Pacific with the Marshall Islands, with nuclearization, people are having to leave islands because their whole entire aina is trashed.
Mm-hmm.
If we even look at what the state of Ko'olawe is right now here in Hawaii, it is
the
island of Ko'olawe. It is so damaged that literally water that gets into that land cannot stay within the soil because it has lost its water table due to American military bombing. So now you have all these people trying to restore the land there, plant trees, redevelop the ecosystem. You know how hard it is to grow anything if your land can't hold water because some guy bombed it for you for 50 years?
It cracked basically what's the natural cistern for what the water sits in.
So for those who aren't concerned, I think we need to look to our past to see what could be the future. So I just wanted to share that real quick for all the listeners that haven't dwelled upon such facts.
Yes, a lot's going on. So you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia, Eric, and Malcolm. Malcolm, do you have any thoughts on any of this? It's kind of heavy stuff.
It's a lot of stuff that I need to process before I could really just...
Yeah.
So much struggles in the world. There is so much struggles in the world. But if we get together and we all love each other, our struggles can overcome everything. And that's why we're here for you on Kauai Community Radio.
Yeah, we're taking calls at 826-7771. Okay, we got a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Felicia, this is Joe. How you doing?
Good, Joe.
You look real busy at the food forest the other a couple of weeks.
That's an example of, you know, working on
Wonderful. Positive
things.
We're talking about, you guys, it's a good show, talking about the economical military complex, which General Eisenhower, by the way, pointed out in 1959 in an interview in Saturday Evening Post, and he was quite worried about it then. And so he also was worried in that interview about the government snooping and the new electric age we were in. Even in 1959, President Eisenhower said, our television that was in its infancy is not working out for the education of the people, which it was supposed to be. But my point is, I don't know if we can stop this colossus of a machine called the American military economical complex. It's not really American anymore. It's almost international. And they bring in more and more. I think the people of the United States and China and Russia, we have to have more interaction. We have to have more groups come here and we go there and be allowed to express what we would like our children, our grandchildren, to live in peace on this planet. At one time after World War II, there, the American GIs formed a Soviet, well, not so much Soviet, it was a club. They wanted to talk with Russian guys who'd been in the army and whatnot. Stalin allowed it for a little bit, and believe it or not, our country, Joe McCarthy, he was the one that squashed it. But that's what we need. We need a more group people, you know, China, Russia, American. China, Russia, American. We need to be talking to each other. And I'm sure those people over there realize the ridiculous government they're putting up with. If we could only get in cahoots and really do something about it as a people, as individual groups, any group, church group, non-church group, whatever. That's all I got to say.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank
Good
you
program.
So much. Thank you. And I think a lot of people are working together. And Malcolm, last time you were on the show, or a couple times ago, you did some hip-hop. You were singing some music, and I was... I was thinking about that is like a lot of times it really takes the arts and all those different pieces to change the meme, to change the way that people are looking at how the world is going, because it's we do shift, but it's tough when, you know, most of the media is owned by the same entities that are actually on the wars. It becomes a very difficult piece.
It just takes a lot of love. Like, when you put love into something passionate and you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for a change, you know, it's bound to happen. You know, people pick up on that love aura and be like, you know, they grew up with so much getting taught how to hate, getting taught how to be robots. And then when they see love, they're like, oh, you know, when I walk down the street, you know, I'm very observant with people. I could look at someone and be like, whoa, he has a lot of anger. You know, that brings me down. But if I look at someone who's like up and joyful, you know, it's like love, like it's all love. And like, people need to understand that we should be able to open up to one another, not just Americans, but, you know, Chinese, Japanese, Indians, Africans, Kenyans, anyone around the world, because we all speak one language. You know, we're all born to love, and that's that's the language of the world, love.
And I think working together on a positive piece, like when I was not really joking when I said this before. When we look at the Rim of the Pacific actions, the RIMPAC activities, if we took a battle that would be important, like to contain the Fukushima meltdown or to pull the plastic out of the ocean. I mean, it would probably, they could spend as much money. I bet they could still have a big production going into, you know, undoing the damage. And that might, you know, then, because like if part of the motivation is the money that's behind in all of this stuff, okay, great, let's spend money. If that's what we're going to do, let's spend money, but let's spend it doing something positive.
Well, people need to realize that money is paper. We made that. That's a man-made thing. Why do we need that to survive, and why does that need to be a motivation? A motivation should be, hey, I want my kids to be thrive throughout the future. Why don't people just be like, oh, if we want our kids to thrive, why do we need to spend a dollar?
Well,
50 cents. I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I think, you know, that's absolutely true, but there's a certain percentage that you know, I don't want to call them psychopaths, but there's a certain percentage that, you know, are in the business of war.
Yeah, but that's, you know, there's less of them, more of us.
There's less of them, and you know,
but
I want to...
They have the more money?
Exactly.
And when I say the people in the business of war, I'm not speaking about our armed servicemen. What, you know, we exploit those people. We hurt those people. We need to not put them at risk. We need to not, you know, sometimes there is a reason for true defense, but this endless aggression. And you know, I've been trying to study up what's going on in the Mideast, and you know, I've been looking at it for a long time, and I really stay away from it for the most part on these shows because I am not an expert at it, and I don't really want to say this is the, you know, the motivation or what's happened right there, but it seems like, you know, as you spoke about the Marshall Islands and the, and really Micronesia, when they were used for nuclear target practice, and now we have a lot of homeless essentially refugees out of that area in...
Yeah, there's people in the Marshall Islands that have been moved to other islands where they are over capacity. They cannot deal with their own rubbish, anything like that.
Like Ebi or...
Yeah, yeah. They're living in tenements, if you will. Government-sponsored tenements, if you will. Go move here. This is where you can go move, or good luck.
Yeah, it sounds like the Indians, you know,
yeah.
and the reservations.
There's similar stories that happen throughout the world, and it's part of the greater picture that's happening here in our own backyards.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's really interesting. We're like, oh, you know, I don't care about this, but pretty much no matter where you go in the world, this is happening in one extent or another.
And I did, somebody had posted for me this, I don't even know how to say it, Minas Gerais in Brazil. There was a big mining disaster. Did you see that?
No.
An amazingly bad mining disaster where a dam broke. And this has been just this week, maybe, I don't know, less than a week ago. But I first saw it with footage somebody took with their cell phone, and
all the dead fish. And
all the dead fish, just the rivers of dead fish and dead animals. But then when you see the pictures that are larger, it has, you know, there's so many people who need to be drinking this water, and it's turned the whole area into a big, big muddy mess, like big region, and it's poisoned. You know, we saw that happening in the Animas River, or just north of Durango near Silverton, Colorado. What, you know, happened in Brazil, this is damage on the level of the Gulf oil spill, and we're seeing these fires going on in Indonesia, and that the problems are so profound, and they're not even really making the news. And
this is the one with the toxic mud that's moving
mm-hmm,
down?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 50 meters of cubic toxic mud moving at a time over an 8-day period.
Yeah, and then it's going to make it out to the ocean, and it's creating a dead zone behind it.
Wow.
We have a caller.
It kind of looks like a lava flow, which is toxicness. At least a lava flow brings out new beginnings. This looks like
toxic mud, yeah.
Whoa.
And it the pictures are just staggering. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for having camera on. Very informative.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and in international issues, stuff that's happening in the Middle East and in the Pacific are issues as well. And it's issues that we have to understand what's going on. And I'm glad you had camera on explaining the United States drive to control the Pacific Asian region and seeing China as its roadblock. But also wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East and what happened in Paris, what happened in Beirut. What happened in Paris is just a blowback of what European colonialism and Western colonialism has done in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. And, I have to say, I agree with that.
Yeah, like, for example, weakening the government in Libya, weakening the government and destroying the government with regime change in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
In Syria, you know, attacking Syria, just left it open for a group like ISIS. This morning on Democracy Now! There were some interesting discussions and explanations as to what is going on in the Middle East, but it is exactly related to U.S. foreign policy and European foreign policy. Like, for example, in Libya, when you overthrew the dictator Gaddafi, he just left it open for ISIS. The United States overthrowing the government of Saddam Hussein left it open for mayhem and for ISIS. And there are a lot of military officers that were with the Ba'ath Party that was kicked out, thrown out, and hunted down. Well, some of these guys have become the mastermind of terrorism for ISIS. You know, so putting more bombs and more missiles into the fray is not going to solve the problem. One of your callers called up and talked about diplomacy, people to people. That stuff is important. That should not be taken lightly.
Yeah.
You know, the guy had some real insight. He mentioned about
Joe.
He had some real insight. He mentioned about, you know, at one time, you know, United States representatives were able to go talk to the Russians. In fact, I had a good friend of mine in the 50s who was belonging to an anti-nuclear group that went and visited Russia. And when he came back, he was fired from several jobs. My friend John Kelly, who was a surfer and a peace activist and a union organizer. So what that individual talked about is very, very important. We have got to lay down the arms, and we have to figure out ways of dealing with these problems. We just can't go into another country and overthrow it, and then not even replace it with anything decent.
Yes, and caller,
just that
we're at the top of the hour. It's about a minute after 5, and I really need to let the listeners know you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox. Continue.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a reason why, like Eric was saying, you have those people coming here from Micronesia. Their islands and atolls were destroyed by the United States nuclear testing. That's why they're here, you know, and they find themselves on the bottom of society, you know. And with the Syrian refugees, it's because of the war that's happening in Syria and this continued bombing by the United States, by France. Saudi Arabia and Jordan is making the situation worse.
And what is your reaction to the statement by Governor Ige that Hawaii would receive some of the Syrian refugees?
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that because America helped to create this problem. It's got to take care of some of these people, you know. And I don't see any problem with Syrian refugees coming to Hawaii or America. You know, in fact, they should go to the mainland. That's where a lot of the hawks are. You know, they wanted to bomb the hell out of Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, these kinds of places. Well, they bear responsibility for it. And I think we bear responsibility. We have to support these people. They got nowhere to go. I mean, they're not terrorists. They're running away from terrorism, you know. And we have to start supporting these kinds of people. There was that young Mexican-American woman that got killed in Paris, you know, and she was a first-generation Mexican, you know, they went to college and her parents were immigrants and she got killed in Paris, you know, and her friends and family were saying that, you know, they're not angry with Syrian people, they're not angry with people from the Middle East because, you know, those people are running away from terror like a lot of the people that are, you know, crossing the border into California and in Texas. Those people are running from terror and violence as well. You know, and so we have to open up our arms to some of these folks because, you know, they're running away from a situation that the United States and the Europeans have helped to create, and they have no one to turn to. I think it's our responsibility, so I'm open to what EA is saying. I don't see no problem with that.
Well, thank you. I know that there's many people who have a range of feelings. You know, I basically feel like how you do, with the exception that we have so many people here right now, 25% of housing insecure people that we haven't even figured that out. You know, and so
We have to take care of that first, but you know. Also, we should be taking care of these people as well. I mean, what about all the rich people that are coming over here from all over the world, you know, settling here, building developments that no one can afford, you know? What about these types? You know, they can come in here freely because they got money. You know, what about taking care of poor people, you know, or a population here that needs help? And even bringing in some refugees wouldn't hurt as well. We've got the money and the resources to do it.
Well, thank you. And I know you've put a lot of work out trying to get the living wage and that you've been working pretty tirelessly for the working people.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to mention, too, is that the Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice, which I work with and which Camera or Kuhan Peik worked with when she was here, is that we're thinking about bringing over a retired Colonel Ann Wright on Martin Luther King Day. We're probably going to be bringing that here. And we'll be able to talk about her worldwide travels, especially those in the Middle East, because she's a strong peace advocate.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And we have to start talking about peace, not dropping more bombs. You know,
well,
that is definitely what we've got to do.
Thank you so much. And I'm expecting any moment now a caller to be coming in from Hawaii Island. So I'm going to...
Well, sorry. Thank you for...
No, sorry. Just thank you so much.
Okay. Mahalo.
Okay. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man.
KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Gino?
Yes.
Hi, hey, thank you. Thank you for calling KKCR. Where are you right now? Are you on Hawaii Island?
Yes, I am on Hawaii Island. I'm en route right now up to Mauna Kea.
And I want to just honor you for how humbly you have been a part of the protecting movement.
Thank you.
I met you up there, and I think you've spent, you know, almost the nonstop 6 months up there, and you've been on Oahu over there to speak, and you've done so very much. And I played a clip of something that you had said on the internet, and I have seen you just being consistently humble and not pulling attention to yourself, but I respect you. So I wanted to hear your mana'o on what's going on up there.
Well, right now, weather-wise, we hear that there's whiteout conditions at the summit. And so, like, it already, like, you know, the mountain is responding to the perceived threat or the threat that there is. I am in a van right now. We are headed, we're on the Daniel K. Inouye Highway. We're going past Pohakuloa Training Center, and we're headed to Puʻuhuluhulu to do protocol, and then we're going to head straight up the mountain.
And you guys are, well, I don't even want to have, make you say it on the radio, but you're doing this in knowing that you're probably going to have very cold conditions tonight?
Yes, and, you know, that's just, you know, the nature of the beast. Like, when we're up there, we just, I mean, it's going to be cold, but it's worth it.
Now, I have been following this issue very closely, and the governor had made a commitment that he was going to tell everybody when they were going to start doing some reconstruction. Is that correct? Or resume construction, when they had planned to resume that construction?
Yes. So that seems to be what's happened. I mean, Lani Keith got word that, you know, tomorrow they'll be heading up and everyone's gearing up. So he did hold his word to that.
So the governor did tell people, and so they're going to come tomorrow, and I guess mostly to be looking at the equipment?
That's what I hear, is it's to service equipment up that's been sitting up there since the groundbreaking, I believe. And not even that is allowed, because if they're servicing that equipment, then it means they're going to start trying to use it. And so that's the reason for the kahea and this call and this stand.
And then I've been watching what's going on the internet, on social media, and it looks like different enforcement officers have been coming over.
From what I understand, officers, dealing with officers from Honolulu and maybe police officers from Honolulu County have joined the force over here. From what I understand, there's actually vans up there to take people away, because when I was arrested on the mountain on July 31st, that's what they took us down in, with a big paddy wagon sort of van. So I believe the same Ford Econoline E-Series vans, from what I understand, like 15 of them, are already up on the mountain.
So if there's 15 of them, they're
and that's unconfirmed, just a rough number that I was given, but I do know that there are vans up there that are unrelated to what we're doing.
And Eric's in here. Eric has been up there a couple of times.
Yeah, so what I've been told from my constituents on the Big Island, that's where my Ohana comes from, is that, yeah, it's been 15 vehicles so far that have been up and down the mountain, and there are DNLR, law enforcement people that are staying at the cabins that are right there where the researchers stay, which is also where a lot of the prominent action has gone down, where the crosswalk has been. If any of you guys have seen any of the photos or any of the things on YouTube or in the news like that.
Yes. Yes.
So, Kalamai, so what I heard from Governor Ige and the justification of why the people that are going to go up there tomorrow to do their work is, this is a direct quote from Governor Ige now, is if this work is stopped, i.e. checking on the machines that are up there, which are leaking oil, which has been documented to be leaking oil on the mountain since, I believe, April. Anyway, yeah. So Governor Ige says, if this work is stopped, it is not a victory. It will be a harm for the environment. If there is violence, as some have suggested, this is not a victory. We are one community, and we must continue to search for a resolution that will help keep this community together. Quote Ige. So, I don't know if that's justifiable, but that's...
So he's saying they got oil dripping.
And they got to go malama the aina in their way that they feel they need to malama aina. But this personally, as someone who's been up there many times myself in this last year, you know, what one person says they're going to do is different from what they actually do. And I don't know if you've heard this, Felicia, or any of the other listeners have heard this, but there's also now been a protocol put out for the news press how they are going to conduct themselves when they're up on the Mauna. And if...
it's what I read... is that there's a containment area. You have to be given permission and then a containment area for the press. So
Kalamai, from what I've read and what I've been told is if need be, they will set up this containment area. So let's say theoretically things become hazardous for safety conditions for the media, who knows. The media will be quarantined to an area. And already, when I was up there for the June 24th, arrest, when they had the big, rocks being thrown up in the road, and there was the construction of the Ahu and stuff like that, and there's the rock walls, the next day when the, Kukia Mauna, the protectors of the Mauna, went to go disassemble the rock wall, there were actually members of the media who were not actually publicized or writing, reporting, just being participants in the community, were told by Office of Mauna Kea Management's rangers that they could not be participating in such activities and they had to be remove themselves from the mountain. So, and it was kind of under the impression that, or at least the impression that I got, that, you know, anything that makes the protectors look good makes OMKM look bad, or the Office of Mauna Kea Management look bad, and the TMT look bad. So, you know, I personally have reservations about this media...
the containment of the media.
And even the head of the Hawaii Tribune Herald, which is the paper on the Big Island, you know, I wouldn't usually say that they're the most... liberal people, but he's even saying, oh, this is a abomination of freedom of speech and media's right to...
Civil Beat denounced it, too.
Yeah.
Freedom of press.
So, I know a number of the people who have been arrested up there recently have been told that they will go to jail if they go back. Is that correct?
Yes, I heard that there was actually a ban, too, on those individuals. They can't go up the mountain for what the judge tried to order.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing, is that they're saying, okay, if you go back up, then you have to do time.
Yeah.
Essentially. So, well, do you have any mana'o that you want to just share with the people from around the islands, you know, besides right in your own area, of what way, or whatever you want to share to the people who are out here?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes in situations like this, I usually draw a blank
And I wonder why that happens. How come I have nothing to say, or why am I so calm? And it's because I go into this mode where I just listen to my spirit. I listen to my gut. And when I moved here from Kentucky, they said that that gut feeling is your na'al, and you have to listen to it. And I go into that mode. And so everyone, because it will lead you in the right direction. Listen to your na'al and do what you got to do from there.
Yes, and so you are following that, and you are up, and you're just going to go stand with everybody for now.
Yeah, and we're actually coming up on Pu'uhuluhulu right now. We're about to stop and do protocol.
Okay.
Very rainy.
Well, I wish you all safety and warmth.
Thank you so much.
And success.
Mahalo for what you guys do. It really means a lot that you're going up there right now. My heart's with you guys, and just, you know, aloha aina, mahalo.
Mahalo nui.
Aloha.
All righty. Here we go.
Okay.
That's right, brother. That's right.
All right. Take care.
There's just one thing I got to say for the people who got banned. Mm-hmm. All I have to say is don't worry about it. You know, even if they do take your body, they can never take your mind. They can never take your legacy. So keep on fighting. Because if you keep on, not fighting in a physical sense, but fighting in a positive sense, you know, if you keep on doing that, nothing but change is going to come. So, you know.
And standing up for what people believe in.
Exactly. Keep striving.
And I think something that's really important in this is even the Supreme Court was asking very good questions. The state basically broke their own rules for themselves. They took cuts in line in the process, and they just really didn't expect anything to get in the way of them being able to do as they like.
It kind of reminds me of the streamlining of the super ferry. And not going through environmental processes like that. And it's really interesting that, you know, the state Supreme Court is, you know, interrogating the Office of Mauna Kea Management, UH, and those who are involved with TMT, saying, oh, so you knew that you were going to go through this process to have to know that the process that you're going through is illegal. And essentially the attorney is all, yeah, we knew that we were going to have to go through this process to know that what we were doing was an illegal process in the first place. And yet, that being acknowledged, the governor is still saying, oh, go forth with what you like do. But yet they haven't finished this court case. So
And it's interesting how the deck gets stacked. Like Carlton Ching, who was deeply fought and successfully not placed as the head of the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
As we had talked about months ago.
So now he's been put in charge of land.
Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Well, right? he's now with University of Hawaii, and he is their property manager.
Property manager.
So they still got the same person in there looking after this. And it's going to be something that we'll speak to in a little bit of even what happens on Kauai. You know, how you can stack the deck for a specific outcome. So from the gross to the subtle, the gross, I would say, is military applications at a huge level, and the subtle is even anything to small little commissions and boards and stuff. Did he have something he wanted to share?
Oh, yeah. The Supreme Court's this issue to stay about the holding off on the construction on Mauna Kea till December 4th. They just issued that maybe 30 minutes ago.
Right on.
Yeah, it's on Facebook and all that.
Okay, so I'm going to have Eric look that up. So they're saying not this week.
Yeah, they said not this week.
Okay.
And from what I was told from my ohana, because, you know, I got a whole bunch of different things
going on yesterday
saying, oh, you know, we let guys come up and all that. And I called one of my good friends, Kappa, and I was like, oh, do I need to come over from Kauai? He's like, no, hold off yet. You know, this is strictly kind of like what Ige said. Okay, we're going up there to protect the environment, to go stop the oil leak. But that's something they could have also done months ago. And right now, the only thing that's up there is a couple of pieces of rag, I believe. Or last time I saw the photos, little rag to deal with the oil spill. I will get back to you about the new court hearing about that, so let me go do some research.
Yeah, and I just had somebody text me to say look at the Kahea site, and I guess that is going to be until December 2nd. So they issued an injunction on the the note I just got said Supreme Court just issued injunction on TMT until December 2nd. See Kahea site. So that can be looked at. So it's good to hear from the people up there. And again, for people who don't understand why so many people care about this issue, is it's bigger than the mountain. It is the government not having to follow its own rules. And I want to bring this around to some local issues that are happening here on Kauai and looking at the challenges that face our boards and commissions and citizens advisory committees. Typically, these are volunteers. These are appointed volunteers. No one's getting paid, or very few of them are getting paid. And it's a lot of work. And I struggle with how little public affairs, public promotion of these issues go out. And I know as a programmer for Kauai Community Radio, it is part of our mission to help be bringing these topics out, to be trying to help those in the positions of making decisions have the community come out and speak. Like, after this show, Malcolm and I are going to go to the Black Pot Park Management Plan at Hanalei Elementary School, and we'll go in and we'll listen, and I hope many people make it in there because it helps them to make a good choice. And some of this stuff is seemingly very small, but it's really not when it's your life and what happens there. Like, if they move the parking off the beach, many people want to see them move the parking off the beach. A couple hundred cars tend to park down there. It's like if Hanalei has a club or a bar that anybody can go to of any age, it's right down there on that spit of sand. And so, like, if they shut that down and they don't be able to place that somehow somewhere else that's actually very convenient, it changes lives. And so they haven't even started to talk about that. I had them on the show here, but we're halfway through the process and they're not even mentioning that. But hopefully tonight there'll be some good input, there'll be some good discussion. This is a consultant that's doing the process. We have many consultants that are involved right now. We have one for the transit plan. We have another for the general plan update. We have these community development plans. We have a water plan. And all of these consultants, I don't know if you've been following this, Eric, but these consultants typically are from Maui or mostly Oahu. We had some that were here from San Francisco. So they're good people. They're working really hard. They talk to the people who show up. The people who show up are typically the people who have the time to show up, who have the money to show up. We don't hear from
the working class, everyday person.
Or the displaced person.
Absolutely.
Or the person who's in jail.
Typically, the most amount of people that hear from these things are those who have a lot of free time. And if you have a lot of free time, you typically have a lot of resources to do that. And you're not just getting by on the day-to-day thing.
Or I'm going to say this too, because I'm almost like rumbling that I put so much energy into going into all these meetings, and at some point it's not just free time. It is time that people have committed. I want to give a shout out to valuing some of these people who are so vigilant, like Ken Taylor, who goes to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, and it is exhausting. And what I do know is, having been a retailer for a long time, if you want to sell something and you want to promote something, there's ways to do it. You put ads out, you put signs up, you put banners up, you have an intention to get people to show up. And if you were to go, hey, I'll put the public notice out on a very difficult to find agenda item.
On a very difficult to find website with lots and lots of...
On difficult, yeah, yeah. And do it the very last moment. Now, it doesn't mean that there's malice, but there is certainly not intention to include this. And I, the Charter Review Commission is one that I want to spotlight for the moment, because we're at one level super lucky to have them. Here's seven people who are spending time doing things like going. Do you guys even know what the charter is?
Nope. The county charter amendment.
Yeah. Do you know what the charter is?
I don't know all of it.
Do you know what it is?
Not enough to talk story about it.
Okay. Well, see, most people don't know. And the charter is like the county's constitution.
Right.
And even if you look at the U.S. Constitution for a moment, this was written in the late 1700s. How much has changed since then, right? And here's a really good document. It's definitely getting toppled. You know, it's hardly even, we mostly have commerce law is what works at our national level. But at our county level, we have something called a charter. And it is, it's on my website, actually, and it's on the county's website, but it's easy to find on my website, which is my name. I can't say it, but I put it up there so people can look at it. But the charter was written, you know, decades ago, and updated decades ago. It was written in the late 50s, and it is like how the county is supposed to be working. And even the last time it was updated, all of these plantations were functioning and working well, and they basically took care of the water, they took care of the electric, they took care of so much, and they, the majority of the population worked for them. They had camps, they had doctor's offices. The plantation took care of the people.
Right.
And then it's adapted and changed as the plantations have shut down. A lot of things have changed. And, you know, nonstop flights and all kinds of things have changed. Everything has changed since this charter was written. And so we have a charter review commission that's able to sit there and look at the different pieces of it and go, at some level, just proofreading, taking things out that, you know, are bad language or something like that. But they've been, in this past 6 or 7 months, talking about some very, very important things that, that impact so much, like whether we have a mayor or a county manager system. We, right now, we have seven island-wide representatives called council members, and the entire island elects all seven of them. But the majority of the voters are in a certain region, and right. So the majority, in fact, it's not proportionate. We don't have representatives for the most part that live out in the further regions of the islands, and so the interests of Lihue and what would be Punamoku, you know, the dominant area, they get what they want more than the rest. So when there's a decision, should we have any local representation, that's something that's up right now. How much it takes to do a ballot initiative. So what these guys do, when they make a decision, it doesn't mean this is the change, whether people like it or not. They decide whether to put something on the ballot, and people can make this decision. Now, when 5 or 6 or 7 people make a decision, and most people don't know about it, and then that just goes on the ballot. People go in there, they're a little confused, they don't even know how to vote for it. Maybe they don't make the most well-informed decision. And it will have a profound influence on how we run the county and what the changes we're making. And so I went to the meeting last time, and I put on Facebook, you know, I went into like basically a dark room, and it really was a dark room. Did they mean to have it be a dark room? Probably not, but I was the only person in there. There weren't any lights on. There's a board up in the way. Can't even see what's going on. It's, you know, you don't even know what's happening. And these choices that are happening there are so very profound. And we really need to have them go in the paper beforehand, go in the paper afterwards, have the press in there when it's happening, be reaching out to the community and asking, you know, what they would like. And, you know, it's a chicken and the egg thing. Whose fault is it? Well, somewhat. They're not presenting well. And all these political leaders, they know how, when they're campaigning, you see their name over and over and over and over again. You know, they know how to, like, put it out there. These more subtle things that are so powerful, they don't invest in getting it out. So I have trouble with that. But the people don't go either. You know, like for the Kilauea water meeting, I was away at the Bioneers Conference. I went to the one in Lihue. It wasn't really very well attended. Only one person showed for Kilauea.
Wow.
And to be looking at what our resources are for the water is huge. And when we have a contractor from Oahu who knows nothing about our water, and what was revealed in the Lihue meeting that I went to from a few people who did come, is that these baseline numbers are known to be inaccurate.
Right.
So it's not that anybody's evil. It's just everybody's
misinformed,
busy, or, you know, I don't really know where the cog in the wheel is that's creating the problem, but like I gone tediously over the minutes of the Charter Review Commission. Mm-hmm. I really had wanted them to come in here and talk with me, so to be able to look at, you know, what are the challenges and how, you know, people can get more engaged. And by the way, the next meeting, and I hope that I'm not the only one in there. I will be in there at 4:00 on Monday, in where the Planning Commission meets, right there in the government buildings. But I look at all these minutes, and here's these huge issues, and, you know, they're decided in an hour and 10 minutes or an hour and 40 minutes. You know, maybe it's, I mean, a lot of people put a lot of energy into it. I know they're tired. Maybe they're working on three or four different things. But we need more than five or six people talking about these issues that are so key. Right. And we need to find a way, and whether it's a hip hop or whatever it takes, we need to find a way to get people to go, oh, okay, I better engage. Because when problems happen, like there's not water, or water flow moves away and you can't have your taro patches working, or like we're looking in Brazil when the dam breaks, part of this is because people aren't engaged enough to be looking at what's going on.
Too comfortable.
Too comfortable, and hoping somebody else, you know, addresses it.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. And in the position of this particular show, our kuleana, our responsibility, is being able to give voice and helping the underserved voice have an opportunity to speak out and to be sharing what's going on. And again, I appreciate all the people who call, the people who share, the people who want to have what's going on here. And many times that is simply through inviting the team to come to their meetings. But people stay shy to come on the air and actually talk about it. And for example, there's something called Na'i Aupuni, which is a vote. Have you been following that one, Eric? It's
not as diligently as TMT, but I have been following it.
It's a very, very big deal. And so it's a nonprofit, though I had trouble finding its 501c3. I actually tried
to
look
at the Akamai Foundation, I believe, is the ones that are supporting them, who do support throughout Hawaii, mostly in mathematics, from what I was able to Google and find on Wikipedia.
Oh, is that right?
If you go onto Akamai Foundation's website, it has some really nice graphics and about two lines of what they represent and who they are as people. And if you go Wikipedia, it's those same two lines.
So very little, I know.
Very little. And, you know, when you read the rhetoric on the Na'i Aupuni website, lots to talk about, but nothing to talk about.
Okay, we'll discuss a little more. I have a caller. Maybe they're calling about that or whatever they want to be calling about. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
Well, I hope, hello, Felicia. I hope I'm not looking for old data, but last week, I think it was, we talked, this is Alan Fife.
Yeah, yeah.
Last week we talked about the water study.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trying to find it on Google, you know, the study of all the water sources and, mm-hmm. and the users of the whole island. Can you kind of review that for me a little bit?
Well, you know, that was one of my suggestions at the meeting, is that they put all this data online. It is not currently online. The Board of Water is in charge of it. I'm turning my pages in my notebook here to be looking at the key information. The Council on Water Resource Management is also helping with it. And there is a... There is, I think it's called Fukunaga and Associates. Yeah, FukunagaEngineers.com. So you people could go to office at FukunagaEngineers.com. They are the Oahu organization that is actually doing the effort. And they're looking at the what's called the Ag Water Use Development Plan in alignment with, you know, determining the sustainable yield, and they have looked at how many production wells. Like, they have 360 registered production wells, but we know there are more than that. And there's 292 surface water diversions that they are tracking. But it's a very big challenge. And I'm hoping that this comes out, this answer to these numbers comes out before our general plan is finished, but it doesn't look like it will. And so when we're looking at the capacity of water, it really matters where we're going to be putting development as relative to that.
Well, fine. Can I? Do you think I can find the information on the Googling Fukunaga?
I would go to – I would email them.
Mm-hmm.
At office at FukunagaEngineers.com.
Okay.
That's FukunagaEngineers.com.
Right.
Engineers.com.
Wonderful. I would like to follow this to the greatest detail because it does affect the whole planning of the island.
It affects the whole planning of the island, and when we have planners from San Francisco not knowing they need to be interfacing with these planners from Oahu, it doesn't matter how good everybody is if they're unaware of when these things fall together. And it's really challenging.
Well, I'm sorry to miss part of your program, but
no worries.
If you could keep reminding people every time you have your soapbox on Tuesdays, bring the subject up and kind of keep us up to date, please.
Yes, I will. And I know that there's an international water conference happening in Honolulu. It's the first time in a long time that it's been there, and that's going to be next summer. And I want to try and go there. We need to really be, you know, on top of that because we seem to have less water lately. We are not having quite as much rain.
Well, that's the whole point. If we're going to be having a little bit of a drought for a while here, who knows?
Yep. So thank you so much for calling in, Alan.
Well, good talking to you, and keep on up the good work. Take care. Aloha.
Okay, aloha.
You know, Felicia, you brought up a good point about the plantations and infrastructure setup. And as someone who has worked in the past for state and federal government here in Hawaii, I'm not going to back them up, but I will say that they are very limited on staff resources and money, often is the time. And when you have all these plantations and all the infrastructure and support of these private entities, it makes it a lot easier to track your resources, especially when you're a plantation and you realize that your whole livelihood is based off of water. And it's not, I think, that you know, the Department of Water doesn't realize that, but there's only so many people in the department, and it's almost like when you have a plantation, each plantation has its own Department of Water.
Exactly, and they had these Hanawai, these people, I want to say men, I think they mostly were men, who they were committed to making sure that we had safe water systems.
Right.
And when we had the Koloko Dam break and some of these problems that are happening, that these agriculture earthen dams are simply becoming almost like a water feature in a subdivision.
Right.
And nobody buying in really understands it. No one has the history.
It's the importance of maintenance.
And the importance of maintenance. And so it becomes a problem.
And it's really interesting, too, because, you know, everyone complains, too. It's like, oh, you know, there's diverted water, and we like to restore water, but,
you know, that's an issue within itself, but the diverted water that we have, this old infrastructure is literally deteriorating while we keep on subdividing our lands that were once held in contiguous parcels by the plantations, not to advocate the plantations were good, but once we start having this more subdividing and privatization of our island lands, it also kind of leads to more the individual taking care of that infrastructure, which then also makes it more difficult for people like the Department of Water Supply to keep track with all these different constituents and stakeholders. Yeah,
I think it's fair to say, I mean, the plantations did a lot of good too. I mean, there's a downside of them, but yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really good things, and I will say for the people on the west side right now, the Kekaha Agriculture Association, if it wasn't for them, and where that water mostly goes to is the biotech seed companies, but they are keeping that ditch system working. In Kilauea, we've basically lost our ditch system.
It's done.
Yeah. And Kapa'a, Wailua, that ditch system is, kind of going away, and so we need to be really involved and decide what do we want and make the right decisions, because these things were hard work, hard labor, right. Mostly from the Chinese, I think, 100 years ago, put all this work in, and so if we don't care for them, they will be gone. Some people would argue they need to be gone, but if that's the decision, it should be very well informed.
There's definitely that argument, and I think also at the same time we need to look at our current zoning of lands and stuff like our agricultural lands. And if we want to keep lands and agriculture, we need to keep water and certain areas where, like, let's just say where the seed companies are now. If we at least keep that water infrastructure, and in the future maybe they go away, and there's some kind of new, more sustainable method of farming practices, we can promote that because we still have that water infrastructure.
And yes, and so some gratitude to them for having kept it going. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. I have to take issue with your last statement about the water system on the east side of Kauai.
Okay, please do, because I know that you know a whole lot more than I do about this. So
yeah,
I know who this is.
Parts of it is temporarily shut down because they're doing work on Upper Kapahi Reservoir at the moment. And some of that work should be done in December. And they're going to be doing a dam within the old existing dam that would service the irrigation systems in that area again. So, we have our problems, but, we've been at it for 15 years now. And, when the plantation left in 2000, we stepped in.
Yes. So where I said...
We're doing the best we can.
Thank you. Where I said that it's kind of done is in Kilauea.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate what happened in Kilauea. And now you're seeing the result of that, on not being able to do the Kilauea egg park properly. Until you guys get that water issue solved, that project, I don't know what's going to happen to that project. And, I know some people are working very hard on it. And, I hope they get it squared away because, once we lose these systems, we will never be able to replace them.
And I know who I'm talking to. I would love to have you come in or some of your group and really give a good education on the water, because I am very novice. I just attend these meetings. I hear it. I've never been Hanawai. I don't manage a water system. I just know that it's a big deal, and I know enough to feel alarm when people aren't showing up for these meetings where we need to have strong mana'o on it. And I get a lot of calls of people concerned that their streams are drying up, and those are probably from wells being drilled.
Well, that could be an issue. Obviously the best place to store water is in your watershed, so it starts there. Yeah, with healthy watersheds. I'm afraid that's something we're losing. Yeah, the alvesia trees are not getting into our watersheds up in East Kauai. especially in the Makalea area. I don't know what we're going to do about that.
So it's damaging the watershed?
I don't think it's a very good watershed tree compared to Uruhi ferns and Ohia.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I'm really worried. It's about a third of the way up Makalea Mountain right now. And, you know, these mountains are actually rain-making machines, right? They have orographic rain. They have winds, warm winds coming in. They rise up when they hit the face of these sheer cliffs. And then, you know, it's cool up there. The water condenses. It's really rain-making machines are what they are. You know, I hate to refer to nature as a machine, but you know, for lack of a better example. So it's really important that our watersheds, you know, stuff, yeah, in my opinion, yeah. All of the other stuff is secondary to that.
I really agree with you, and I know as a feeder piece to that, too, is managing the overabundance of maybe pigs and goats up there that start to do a lot of damage up top. And so that's where it goes with the fencing. And my, I kind of half joke and say we're incarcerating too many of our hunters. You know,
I
go in and I advocate for people in court, and I see people getting these TROs and they get their guns taken away from them, and they seem like manini issues to get the TRO, and then the gun's gone, and I think, okay, there's the watershed. You know, we have to really have more of an understanding of how these things come together, and I'm just building pieces of that understanding myself, but Kauai's Soapbox is meant to be a venue for helping educate.
Very good. So you keep up the good work, and you know, we'll chat one of these days.
Okay, and do you have a petition out that you want to speak to? I think I saw that.
You know, I'm off to this local council meeting.
Okay.
You know, I saw you at the last one, but yeah. I gotta run off to this one right now. We're having the Puna district tonight.
Okay, and that's at the P.E. Coy building at 6 o'clock, in case anybody would like to go.
That's it. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Like I said, we'll chat sometime, so you take care.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha.
He's really sharp on all this stuff.
He's very Akamai, that gentleman.
I know who that is.
Yeah, I do too. You know, the gentleman that just called, he makes a really good point about the change in the composition of our upland forest. I spent a lot of years doing research over at UH and over in Hilo, particularly looking at the Koala Mountains. And one of the things that's been documented various times throughout Hawaii is the change in our forest changes our water flow. So species such as strawberry guava that have completely taken over watersheds and led to just that one species growing there and nothing else has resulted in drying up of stream beds and stuff like that. Species like strawberry guava, I'm not sure about Albizia, but other non-native species have also been documented to be water hoggers instead of water give backers.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, our majestic Ohia lehua that we always mm-hmm. talk about that we see up on the mountains is really great because not only does it capture passing vapor that's not even in direct rain, but like through clouds and fog. But so it collects that water and it doesn't just suck up that water, but releases it slowly back into the watershed. So not only do we have consistent supply of water, but we have consistent slow trickle downs of water where we don't have a lot of excess sediment being built up in our streams. And we have, you know, the result of stuff like brown rivers. So when we have these brown rivers, not only are we affecting our own stream quality, we're also affecting our reefs. So it's a whole greater picture. And I really appreciate that the caller brought it up about managing it from the source at the pico and looking at it from a holistic sense.
And I want to speak even to demographics. I've lived here since, you know, the mid-'80s, 84. Many of us who don't have grandparents from here, we don't learn all those pieces. And so I'm kind of speaking for a moment to the people who are newer to the island, how important it is actually to be going and learning and attending and getting why people need to have those barking dogs that can go up and hunt those pigs, and why we need to have the system that worked for a long time, because I do see that as a really big point of contention. Yep. And pieces that are key in the culture, and I don't like to kill things. I get where people have empathy and maybe don't want to have anything killed, but if there is no, we're the natural predator. So when you spoke about a keystone species, or when you introduce a new species and it changes the whole water, you know, they saw a lot of what happened when they took the wolves out of the Rocky Mountains, and it started creating all kinds of watershed problems and putting the wolves back in, mm-hmm. that kept in check the population of the secondary animals that got out of control and started really impacting. So there's so much area. It's our responsibility to teach ourselves about our aina, about our land, about our politics, and how to make things work. I'm going to make an on-air suggestion. And I was hoping to have somebody from a different person than myself, but, I mean, if not me, I would like to see it be somebody other than me. But, like, at the end of this show, every show, we play County Council Report and Jazz with John, whose show is up next. He does the County Council Report. It's like a little news piece. We need to have a boards and commissions report, and people need to get in the habit of listening and learning, because what happens in those boards and commissions, you know, there's the planning commission, the police commission, the ethics commission. There's so many different commissions that make these decisions that people later get upset about. And I know for myself, as the host of this show, I get upset when people get upset. It's easier if they're proactive, figure the problem out on the front end, instead of being angry about the outcome because they didn't participate 2 years ago. And so we'll try and do a boards and commissions report to be saying what's happening. And it's really good to actually show up at those meetings, and you know, those meetings shouldn't be an hour long. They really probably need to be a few hours long, where these topics are being deeply digested and mm-hmm. looked at, and people understand. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Na'iel Puni. I just want to say a little bit on that one. You were looking that up.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, it was established in 2014 as an entity that is not supposedly involved with the state of Hawaii, or the whatever you like call it, the fake state of Hawaii.
It's supposed to be independent.
It's independent. It has nothing to do with the United States.
But the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is paying that budget, and I'm seeing that there are very expensive ads going out in the paper, and so it is somewhat state-funded.
It's sort of state-funded. It's, so OHA, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, like, on the website, it says OHA, you know, acknowledge that there needs to be an organization of people to decide the future of Native Hawaiian self-governance
right,
in
which
the islands.
Is, and I'm speeding you up because we're almost out of time. It becomes a nation to nation, or
a nation within a nation.
So instead of working with the State Department, it's working with the Department of Interior.
Correct, the DOI.
So the interpretation that I'm hearing pretty consistently is that creating that board of 40 individuals who makes the decision, it is like becoming a Native American tribe. And the people who are adverse to this say, no, we are a nation of all different kinds of ethnicities. And on this Friday at 6:00 at Wilcox Elementary School, there is going to be a discussion with a panel there. And I will say that this is a panel that is not comfortable with the choice. Walter Riddy is among them. And then Trish, I got to look up her full name here, Trish is another speaker. There's three people coming from different islands. There's three different islands that are coming and sharing their mana'o on why they are concerned about the choice that's being made for people. That's Trisha Keholani Watson. And I know another man, I'm forgetting his last name, is Donovan. He's coming from Oahu. They are going to speak, and they're going to be sharing why they're concerned, why they don't think this is good. And then I know another perspective that was brought to my attention is the leadership that is going to be controlling this is the same leadership that has been the Anahola Hawaiian Homestead Association.
Correct.
And so for people on Kauai, they're going to have a better understanding of what might be brought from it. And then the Anahola Hawaiian Homestead Association has definitely been aggressive and effective at creating things. They put the solar power system there on the side of the road in Anahola. They put the commercial kitchen and the little merchandise area up there.
The Huli Huli Chicken Shack and all that, yeah.
Right in that area. And then Kumu Camp.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a group that has been effective at taking Department of Hawaiian homelands and converting it to something that can create some money or, you know, some different kind of things. So if people are happy with that, then maybe that's what they want. And many people aren't happy with that. But I know that the candidates from Kauai have been invited to this meeting on Friday. And if people are unclear, this would be a good meeting for them to go and be able to hear what is being suggested.
This is 6 p.m. at Wilcox, right, on Friday?
6 p.m. at Wilcox. So we're gonna make room. It looks like Rich is in here. Are you covering for Jazz with John?
I am. Nice to see you.
Yes. So we're still gonna have some jazz music, and I'm gonna play Amy Goodman's little pitch. I like that. She does such a good job from Democracy Now! And we will hear the county council report, which says what's coming up. Malcolm, do you have any final thoughts for the listener?
Thank you. And I love all you guys. So that's all I got to say.
Right on. And how about you, Eric?
I got the Mauna on my mind. And the reason why I got it on my mind is it's not just an issue that has to do with the Big Island. It doesn't have to do with the Hawaiian Islands. It doesn't have to do with just Hawaiians. It's a global thing that represents more to me. It's a movement for cultural justice, social justice, economic justice, environmental justice. So I would ask all you that feel such thoughts to keep those things in mind if you care for such things, and give your support and aloha. And I love you guys so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, and you have been listening to KKCR Hanalei KEQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's the county council report for the week of November 16th. There will be a regular council meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights from the lengthy agenda. The mayor transmits for council consideration for inclusion in the 2016 County of Kauai legislative package a bill for an act authorizing the issuance of general obligation bonds and making an appropriation in the amount of $7,150,000 for five items, and the Committee of the Whole has recommended approval on this. Prosecuting attorney requests council approval to correctly reflect state contract amounts and time frames from agenda items and to spend state funds in the amount of $297,062 for various purposes. The chief of police requests council approval to spend funds from the State of Hawaii Enhanced 9/11 Board for $2.3 million for the next generation public safety answering point, software suite, and associated necessary hardware and software. The county engineer requests council approval to spend State of Hawaii Department of Transportation Safe Routes to School program federal funding to plan, develop, and implement safe routes to school projects. The county attorney requests authorization to spend additional funds up to $26,500 for special counsel's continued services provided in the Kauai Police Commission versus Bernard P. Cavallo Jr. in his official capacity as the mayor of the county of Kauai and related matters. Also requested is authorization to spend up to $40,000 for special counsel's continued services provided in a civil case. Councilmember Yukimura transmits for council consideration for inclusion in the 2016 County of Kauai Legislative Package, a bill authorizing the issuance of general obligation bonds and making an appropriation in the amount of $5 million for the purchase of the courtyards at Waipoli Affordable Housing Project. Under committee reports, the Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee received for the record a request from Council Chair Raposo for the county engineer to provide a briefing regarding the Complete Streets project. The Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee received for the record a request for the Director of Economic Development requesting agenda time to present the Kauai Tourism Strategic Plan update. The Budget and Finance Committee approved as amended Bill 2600, a bill relating to the beneficial tax rate for property use for long-term affordable rentals. They also approved Bill Number 2599 on $71,909 in county matching funds for the aerial apparatus vehicle for the Kauai Fire Department. This is also under bills for the second reading. Also under bills for the second reading is Bill Number 2600, Draft 1, for an ordinance amending the county code relating to the beneficial tax rate for property use for long-term affordable rentals. There will be a non-public executive session. Purposes for the county attorney to provide the council with a briefing on the retention of special counsel to represent Irvin Magallanes versus the State of Hawaii and related matters. Also, for the county attorney to provide a briefing on Kauai Police Commission et al. Versus Bernard P. Cavallo Jr. in his official capacity as the mayor of the county of Kauai and related matters. And finally, to brief counsel on the Diana Gossifal White versus the county of Kauai civil case and related matters. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai/webcastmeetings. Until next week,
thank you, John. Good evening. Cousin Rich here sitting in for Jazz with John and KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
Whatever skies get gray to me and draw